People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. We have a South African composer with us this week, Pieter Bezuidenhout, a multi-award-winning composer, choir conductor, instrumentalist and producer, whose musical voice has come to be recognizable as truly unique and innovative, according to a report in the Sunday Times. And also, they say, constantly striving to bridge the gap between the younger and older generations of musicians across the cultural spectrum. So he creates without the baggage of the past, and that comes from a report in Die Bild. So Pieter has received awards in composition from the European Academy of Choral Conductors for his choral work, Star Dance, as well as the Stefan Schroffier International Composition Competition. That's the award in 2015 for the work Huis van die Doves for soprano and piano, as well as in 2017 for the Blue Lady Sonata for clarinet and piano. And this year, Bezuidenhout was also one of the judges in the third South African Composers Competition, and his production company, Vector Productions, are hosting their annual arts festival in Pretoria called the Mogale Arts Festival. So, Pieter, quite a lot to introduce you, but welcome indeed.
Thank you so much, Rodney.
I believe, incidentally, that you have recently moved to Cape Town because I thought you were based in Pretoria and that we just managed to catch you while you were in Cape Town. But you say, no, you've moved here.
I have moved here. I moved here at the end of last year after spending almost 20 years in Pretoria doing many fantastic projects and running a lot of projects there. I think as an artist, you continuously fine-tune yourself and you find ways to grow and find new creative outlets. Incidentally, at the end of 2023, when I applied for an American visa to go visit my sister and I got my passport back, I saw that the expiry date for the visa is in 2033.
Gosh, that's a 10-year visa.
You get a 10-year visa, yeah, wow, to go to America, yes. And that gave me some food for thought about where I would be in 2033. And I had realized that I had reached a creative roof in my environment in Pretoria and that I needed to find new spaces to develop and grow, create new connections, build a bigger network across the country. And I think Cape Town was a very easy fit for the move because I have many colleagues and friends here and connections that I could plug into to become part of the musical community here.
It's interesting because you think that moving from a place like Pretoria, where you said you had so many contacts, and to make a move is actually quite brave. So that must have taken a little bit of courage, or was it easier than I assume?
I think it's a bit of both, Rodney. Mm-hmm. I think it's always brave to move somewhere new, even if you are known to the environment and you know the environment. It's always something brave to do. I think in terms of all the projects that I ran in Pretoria and am still running in that regard, I think that my move was also meant to help me grow, to take stuff back there, to not simply shut down what I have there, but to help that grow through my growing somewhere else.
And is it working so far? Have you found that in your year in Cape Town, you've been able to make very valuable contacts and grow?
Yes, definitely.
And contribute all those
things.
Yes,
contribute and grow, find a new network that helps me to connect other types of art forms here that I could also take back there and grow here. So definitely, yes.
So does that mean you might go back to Pretoria one day?
I don't know if I would go back to Pretoria, but I love Pretoria. And I think...
Were you born there, Pieter?
No, I was born in Kempton Park in Johannesburg, okay. And then I moved there when I went to university. I don't know if I would move back there, but I would definitely continuously go back there.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have you're a multi-award-winning composer, choir conductor, instrumentalist, producer, so there's a lot we can speak about. But just at this early stage in the interview, I'd like to know where the music inspiration comes from. Do you come from a musical family? What made you become a musician, a composer?
I do come from a musical family. I don't think anyone in my immediate family are musicians, but there was always a great push for me and my sibling to explore the musical world. And from a young age, I was influenced and exposed to classical music. I played in orchestras, I sang in choirs. So when I realized that becoming a composer would be one of my great life missions at school, it was something that I was supported in pursuing.
Mm-hmm. So it was at school that you already wanted to be a composer as opposed to an instrumentalist or a performer?
Yes, definitely. I actually have a funny story about that. Every parent, when you tell them that you are going to become an artist, there's always a bit of pushback because you have to be a lawyer, you have to be an accountant, something that puts bread on the table. That is the story that you get. And I remember when I was in matric, I wrote in for a composition competition. And I won the competition for a piano work that I wrote. And the first thing that I bought with my prize money was a bread, which I gave to my father. And after
literally that, putting bread on the table.
Literally putting bread on the table. And after that, the deal was sealed.
Did they appreciate the joke?
They appreciated
That's
the joke.
That's a lovely story. Good heavens. And then, so you went to university, and then the rest is history, as they say, because you launched into this business. And clearly, your tastes are very, very wide because of these gaps that you bridge. And you've also, you involved yourself in pop music, don't you, as well as classical music?
Yes. So I think my world has always been divided between the instrumental world and the choral world. I find a lot of times people specialize. Either they sing in choirs or they play in orchestras. And I've always been a part of both of those. Mm-hmm. And that made it very easy for me to bridge those two worlds and create music that doesn't create that separation. I think as an artist, I'm always pursuing new genres, finding new ways to express myself. That's why in 2023, I believe it was, I brought out an electronic pop album that I sing songs that I write.
What did you do that? It's just part of you.
It's actually an interesting story. One of the girls that sang in my adult choir in Pretoria, she is a Jungian music art therapist. So she uses Jungian archetypes to do music therapy. And how the therapy works is you go for a session and you discuss one of the archetypes that you are struggling with. And then she puts you down into a deep meditative state and plays a music program that consists of anything from Mozart to Finding Nemo. And then afterwards she wakes you up and you draw a mandala. And in the conversation with her, she told me that there wasn't any music written specifically for the archetypes, specific archetypes to use in this therapy. So I told her I would write music that you could use. And in this process of doing the therapy and writing the music, it came out as electronic pop music.
I like the way you say it came out.
Yes.
As though you didn't have to really struggle. It just happened.
So sometimes you start with a project and then you discover where the project is going from angle. You want to do one thing as a composer and then something else comes sometimes.
Okay, fair enough. And on that subject, the music that you select for us to listen to is all your music, and I'm glad about that because then we get an idea of the sort of thing you do. And the first piece you've chosen, Huis van die Doves, tell me what to expect.
So the Huis van die Doves is a very famous poetry collection by Breiten Breitenbach. And I wrote a three movement cycle on poems from that collection. And the one that we are going to listen to now is called De Pre Wang Wei. And in this performance, it's recorded by Magdalene Minnar and Marijke Johnson on the piano.
As die somer reeds my jaar deur die bloeisel spaars reeds lang hare het roei ons reeds deur die kristal oor die Faster und so flickernde Gesichter der
Well, now, that's a piece called Huis van die Dovers. And it's a piece written by my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, the composer Peter Bezuidenhout. And we heard the singer Magdalien Minnar. Who was the pianist?
Marijke Johnson.
Marijke Johnson. And it's based on a poem by Breton Breitenbach, you said.
Yes, it's a setting of one of his poems from his collection of poetry called Huis van die Dovers.
Do you, in your compositional style, do you enjoy setting words to music? Or do you prefer, or do you work just as well in abstract music without any words?
I think that setting words to music is something that has always come more naturally to me, coming from a choral background and a singing background. Sometimes I feel that using words gives good structure to the music that you are writing. And it also makes music more accessible. I think in my tenure as a composer, I've written a lot of choral music because we have such a vibrant choral scene in our country that I have become well acquainted with setting words to music. I think Breiten Breitenbach is an exception in terms of the poetry because a lot of his poetry is not always lyrically written from a viewpoint. It requires you to think out of the box sometimes about how you're going to set this, the second movement from this specific cycle. Die Brandende Amandelboom is one of those poems that really required a lot of thought in how it was going to be concisely written into a leader.
Does that mean it doesn't have a sort of, it doesn't naturally have a rhythm, a musical rhythm?
No, it's not like, for example, the poetry of M.P. van Wyk Loo, which naturally has a four-line stanza that you can set to music. It is irregular, and each of the lines are also different lengths as he creates his ideas and puts it out through words.
Your interest in choral music is very, very strong, isn't it? Because I gather that at one stage you were a conductor of five choral ensembles in Pretoria, Tshwane.
Yes, indeed. I, coming from the choral world, I've always been naturally thrusted into it. I think of all the ensembles that I conducted in my time in Tshwane in Pretoria, one of the most special was probably the Horizons Project Choir. Mm. Last year we celebrated our 10 years. And the purpose of the choir was to debut new choral music by South African composers specifically. I think over the span of the 10 years, over all the projects, we premiered almost 70 new works by South African composers.
70, yes. Wow. So there's a lot of work being written by South African composers for choirs.
There is a lot of work being written when there are platforms for them to be performed in. I think that as composers in our country, we have a lot more choral composers than we have instrumental composers because we are a singing nation. Mm. There are so many choirs. For example, just in Pretoria, for example, that they call the choir capital, there are so many chamber choirs. And there is a culture of commissioning new music that has emerged in the last 10 years. I think when I started the Horizons Project Choir, the purpose of the choir was because of the lack of platform for new works to be premiered in many languages. There's obviously big competitions like the Artika Fia Aplos National Choral I stayed for it, but that specifically only focuses on Afrikaans music, while I wanted to focus on all the other languages that are available to us.
Oh, so you do write in languages that are not English or Afrikaans?
No, I also write in all the languages, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Which must have its own challenges as well. You know, you spoke about Breiten Breitenbach being irregular here and there, and English and Afrikaans, rhythmically perhaps, can be different from Zulu or Khoisan.
Completely, completely. In 2023, I was one of the artists in residence at the University of Johannesburg. And the work that I wrote for it was a large choral cantata called Amale Zulu, based on the poetry of Benedict Vilakazi, and it was all in Zulu. And the interesting thing as a composer, it's they say that when you speak different languages, you show other parts of your personalities. And in the same way, as a composer, I found writing in Zulu, the way that I write is different. The way that I structure my chords comes out differently because of the way that the language leans itself to music.
When you say the chords and all that, are you talking about chords with an African basis or a Western basis? What sort of harmonics structure do you use?
I think I've always been exploring that. That is something very, very interesting to me about how do you, as a Western-trained composer, delve into the world of African music, because it's two different worlds. Mm. And I think that my style of writing, I've always tried to use influences of both, but not depend on one singularly, because I think it makes music more interesting. So when I speak about the chords, how I construct it, for example, my music in Afrikaans would a lot of the time be not more tonal, but would be triadic, while chords that I wrote for my cantata consisted of chords that were fourths on each other. It just sounded better with the words.
Okay, yes. I'm sure it does. Okay, well, let's take a break now. And I'm glad, as I said earlier, Peter, that we are listening to your music. And this next piece, Pictures from the West, Autumn Evening in the Mountains, sounds very evocative. What are we going to hear?
So this is actually a very special track that I'm going to play now, because it is actually unreleased. Uh-huh. So this work was commissioned by the International Harp Congress in Hong Kong in 2017. And it's a work for soprano and harp, sung here by the fantastic soprano Jessica Ng, and on the harp it's Judy Ho. And Pictures from the West explores the view of the East from the West. So I actually use the poetry of the very famous Chinese poet Wang Wei. Incidentally, it also links up with the previous Breitenbach piece that was the Prey Wang Wei, where he also discusses Wang Wei.
Okay.
And this work tries to encapsulate the feeling of an afternoon, or it's an autumn evening in the mountains.
Well, now that's a piece written by my guest on People of Note this week, Peter Bezuidenhout, Pictures from the West, Autumn Evening in the Mountains. And the singer Jessica, and her surname is spelled N-G, and you pronounce it Ng.
Hmm. She's from Hong Kong. Yes, okay. It's a very common surname to have double letter surnames
without
in Hong
any
Kong.
Vowels.
Without any vowels, yes.
And the harpist is Judy Ho.
Yes.
Also from Hong Kong.
Also from Hong Kong, yes.
Okay. So was it a challenge to write for the harp?
As a composer, you are allowed to say that it is a challenge, but you are never allowed to say that you cannot write for it. I remember the first time that I was asked to write for the harp, I had no clue how to write for the harp. But I said, yes, obviously I can write for the harp. And then I went and studied how to write for the harp.
Right.
The project that we did in Hong Kong, specifically for the International Harp Congress, it was so interesting because in that concert, Jessica also sang some of my Breitenbach songs because she's very interested in Afrikaans. She's been here many times. We've done projects together here as well. And it was so interesting during our rehearsal. She's a fantastic professional trained soprano. And halfway through our rehearsal, we had to take a break because her muscles in her mouth was tired from producing Afrikaans sounds because it's completely foreign to the way that Chinese or Mandarin speakers use their vowels and their consonants.
That's very interesting. One doesn't think of that.
One doesn't think of it.
It's easy enough to think of Italian or German or French and yes. English, but Afrikaans to Mandarin must be
it's quite a leap, change. Yes.
To affect all parts of your vocal cords, your jaw muscles,
yes,
everything.
And where you place the sound in your mouth,
yes,
specifically, and especially if you're a professionally trained singer, mm-hmm. you want to get it as accurately as possible. But writing for the harp is, since I wrote my first work for the harp, I fell in love with the instrument and the possibilities that the instrument gives you to create colors.
What were you play the piano, don't you? That's your primary instrument.
The piano and the viola.
Oh, the viola.
Yes,
Good for you.
Do play that.
Lovely. No, I mean that very sincerely. The viola's got, I know there are lots of viola jokes around.
Yes.
But really, the viola's got the most wonderful sound. One of the things I want to cover as well is your festival. I know there's just been a festival. It's the Mukhale Festival, is it?
The Mukhale Festival,
Festival. One has just happened. There's another one coming up later in the year. Just explain what that festival is all about, what the point of it is.
So the Mukhale Festival was a festival that me and my business partner, Amy van der Walt, started in 2021 to create cross-cultural collaborations between different groups. There was a situation during COVID and the flat that I lived in Pretoria. There was two of my friends that moved in that became friends, two Zulu guys that lived beneath me. And we had this big conversation about what is important poetry in our various cultures. And I realized that for me to speak about Breitenbach and the beauty thereof is something that can sometimes be lost to people that speak other languages. Its cultural artifacts become closed to each other because we don't always speak each other's languages, and then there is something that is lost. And we decided to start this festival to promote cross-cultural collaborations where you would have a Zulu and Afrikaans piece mixed together and try and create bridges that could help people to understand each other's cultures through various art forms.
When you say together, do you mean not in the same piece, but two pieces, one in Afrikaans, one in Zulu?
Sometimes, but sometimes also in the same piece. For example, at the festival that we had last year, we had a production where we took Arnold van Wyk's Vier Weemoedige Liedjies, the famous Afrikaans song cycle, and we performed it in Afrikaans, but also had it translated into Venda. And it was, the poetry was read while there was interpretive dancing, and then it was sung. So there was this cycle going around, and it was then reinterpreted on a prepared piano. So to create this kind of, to create an interesting setting where you can experience various languages interpreting the same art.
That's very interesting. Did it go down? How did it go down?
It went down really well. It went down really well. I think people enjoyed it a lot because you get exposed to another language and poetry in another language in a setting where you feel comfortable and also understand what is being said. Mm-hmm. I think many times, not myself, I enjoy being put into situations where I don't understand a word. I enjoy that. But many other people, they shy away from it, not because they sometimes don't like it, but because they do not feel informed to know what is happening. And that takes time and effort. And to create situations like at the Mukhale Festival where we do that deliberately to expose people in a setting where they are comfortable. All the feedback that I've always received has been fantastic.
So this Mukhale Festival has happened here in Cape Town. Was it the first time in Cape Town?
No, so it's in Pretoria.
Oh, it was in Pretoria.
It's in Pretoria, yes.
When will we see it in Cape Town?
I don't know. I don't know if it will come to Cape Town. The big thing is why it's called the Mukhale Festival is the name derives from the Mughale, a very big chief that lived there, and that the name of the Mughalis Mountains comes from.
Oh, does it? Is that it?
Yes, so that's why we called it the Mughale Festival, because it refers to this piece of mountain range that encapsulates so much of Pretoria and Tshwane. So I don't know if it would work here necessarily, but I'm always open to suggestions.
Yes. You'll have to also think of a way to incorporate our mountains.
Yes,
perhaps,
in another way, yes.
Because they're so different, the mountains here, yes, as opposed to Mughalisburg.
To have a mountains festival all over the country. I have different ones at different mountains.
And with the Mughale Festival, Peter, are you the only composer, sort of a composer in residence, or do you invite other people to participate?
So at the festival, I am more of a producer and a festival director. So I don't necessarily perform my own music at this festival. It's more of creating a platform for other people's music arts to be performed. I feel that as a composer that is professional and does it all the time, to create platforms for other people to also have their works, their art, their theater performed is also important.
Mm-hmm. Just talking about composers and things, one of the other things you've done here in Cape Town is that you were one of the judges for the composers' competition here. And from what you've known and seen, there are fine young men and women coming up, aren't there, who are composing in a way that needs to be taken seriously.
Definitely. I was very surprised by the number of entries that we had for this year's competition and the quality of entries. Mm-hmm. I think that is the importance of having composition competitions like this, because it forces composers' hands to write bigger. I think there are a lot of smaller competitions on a national level that allows people to write music for instrument, voice, piano, or ensembles. But this is really the only competition that allows composers to write for full symphony orchestra, which makes it really important, because you will never know what your ability is to write for an orchestra until you write for an orchestra, whether your work was chosen or not. But the thought process that goes on in a composer's mind whilst thinking inside bigger forms is really important for your development.
Do you write for full symphony orchestras?
I do write for full symphony orchestras. My last work was actually premiered last year at the Stellenbosch International Chamber Music Festival. I wrote the commissioned South African work. And it was actually also on a Zulu theme by the book by Credo Mutwa, Indaba My Children. I used that as the basis for a 5-movement work for symphony orchestra and narrator.
And do you enjoy writing for a symphony orchestra? Because
yes.
seem to write for so many things. You're saying yes, they're very enthusiastically.
Yes, I do. I do really love writing for a symphony orchestra. I think in terms of my personality, I like colors. I like exploring various colors. And the orchestra really allows you to play around with so many different palettes and timbres and sound worlds to really create something for people to be engulfed in. I think also because writing for choral music is something that comes so naturally to me. Writing for an orchestra is something that really extends that.
Challenges you,
yeah. Mm. And I don't think how long you've been a composer doesn't matter. It'll always be a challenge to write something bigger and better and or smaller and more intimate, but with 80 instruments.
And lots of color.
And lots of color, yes.
Let's have another piece of music. Peter, I see here from the album Light the Whole Sky, Pirnef, what are we going to hear?
So the next work that we are going to listen to is actually very special to me. It was released 2 weeks ago on the Tux Camerata, the university choir's latest album. And it's one of the movements of my Pirnef Mutete, which is cycles of songs that I'm writing based on the famous Johannesburg panels that was painted by Pirnef. I believe they're in the Rupert Museum in Stellenbosch. And I created works that on a vertical level explores the motet from Bach's viewpoint using his way of writing for voices, and on a horizontal level it explores Pirnef's colors in his painting. And this movement that we are going to listening to is called Lied, Sing vir die Here 'n Nuwe Lied, which derives from Sing dem Herrn ein neues Lied, the famous Bach motet, and it is sung here by the Tux Camerata accompanied by Charles Duplessis.
Thank you.
a piece by my guest on People of Note this week, Peter Bezuidenhout, Light the Whole Sky. And you said, Peter, that this was based or inspired by the paintings of Pirneev.
Yes, so it's actually a very special collection of Pirneev's that you can see in the Rupert Museum in Stellenbosch. And it's a collection of 42 paintings that was originally commissioned by the Johannesburg City Council for the newly built train station in the 1930s. And it's one of Pirneev's biggest collections of paintings that he did. And each painting depicts a specific scene from South Africa, whether it's a mountain or it's a field. This specific lead is based on the portrait of the Naisna heads.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting project. I think as a composer, we sometimes spend our time working on small projects, and then over a lifetime it compounds to many projects. But the Pirneev Motete is something that I've decided to be one of my life projects, because there are 42 paintings and I've written 4 movements, so I still have 38 movements to go.
Right.
Yes, and it's very interesting to work with the visual elements of Pirneev, because it's so it's very a specific type of style.
Unique, yes, and those clouds, those huge clouds you drew as well. It's, you know, earlier I said to you, were you inspired by words? And now the obvious question you're answering as we speak is, do paintings and scenes inspire you as well musically?
Yes, I think that as a creative, one must not put boundaries on what inspires you. I think sometimes it can be something someone says, it can be a cloud, it can be a type of sound that a gust of wind makes. And you have to keep yourself open to that experience. I think there is a balance in between being a free creative and being a commissioned creative. On the one hand, you get a lot of commissions and you get specific things to write. People want specific things. And the more specifically they can tell you what they want, the more specifically you can give it to them. On the other hand, you have to be an open creative that experiences creativity from everything and takes that to create something new.
And that must be, in fact, more of a challenge.
Sometimes, yes, indeed.
Than the commissioned one, because the commissioned one
has parameters.
Yes, it has parameters. You're given an idea.
Yes.
But anything else is open to your own creativity completely.
Exactly.
You've got to find a center or something.
And you've got to, sometimes you have to decide on a medium and how it's going to be expressed.
Mm.
If you are only experiencing the world and writing music, you have to decide on the structure of how it's going to be presented to people for them to understand the impetus of what you experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does become not harder, but the process becomes creatively more interesting when there aren't words. When you have to express yourself only through melodic lines or harmonies. Yes.
Colors,
sort of yes.
You know, I wanted to ask you right at the beginning, I used a quote from De Beult, which said that you strive to bridge the gap between the younger and older generations of musicians across the cultural spectrum, and that you create without the baggage of the past. What does that actually mean? Can you explain that to me? I get all sorts of ideas what that might mean.
Well, what I've interpreted that to mean is the way I explore my creativity as a white South African male that comes from a Western tradition, how I try to embrace other cultures and embrace other forms of music making to help me amplify not just myself, but that which I am celebrating.
So baggage could mean just following the tradition of an old school thought.
Yes, and the baggage is something that you get from your teachers, that you get from the world that you are creating from.
Mm-hmm.
And to be free from that, I think, is something also knowing the rules to break the rules.
Yes,
that's,
of course.
That's always how I thought about it. It's the same thing with the composition competition that we spoke about that happened now with the CPO. I think a way that you adjudicate something like that is to be able to see whether a composer is able to orchestrate from outside the rules. If he knows the rules enough to be able to break the rules to create something new. And I think that is what the baggage comes from. It is not simply to create what you know, but to create something new that is fresh, removed from its past intention.
As we know, the great composers did, from Mozart through Beethoven to Wagner and into the 20th century. Now we have another piece of music, Peter. This is also written by my guest, Peter Bezuidenhout, Atilogwa, in Gomaya, Africa, an African dance suite for piano using dancers from different tribes and areas in Africa.
Yes, so this was a very interesting project that I did a few years ago. My publishers are in Austria, and they commissioned me to write a piano suite. And I decided to, once again, use my influence from Africa and to take various dance forms, not to use the music of those specific tribes, but to use the colors, the tonalities, the rhetoric of those tribes to create new pieces of music. And each of them explores the rhythmical structures of specific dances. And the Atilogwa is an acrobatic dance from Ghana. And you'll hear that in the music, how the acrobats, it's a very specific type of celebratory dance where people jump around to in various occasions in their settings. Yes.
Well, we were meant to imagine people jumping up and down with that Atilogwa,
yes,
piece by my guest, Peter Bezuidenhout, composer, choir conductor, instrumentalist, all sorts of things, as we've discovered, Peter. And one of the other things I want to ask you about is, among the many things you do, you seem to have fingers in many pies, Vector Productions. What is that?
Vector Productions is a company that me and my business associate that started the Mukhali Festival started together also about 5-6 years ago to help create a platform on various media levels. We release albums of South African music. We publish South African choral music. We also host competitions. We had a lovely competition where we created new piano music, South African piano music. And it's a platform to help us realize our dream of creating more platforms for people to create South African art.
Gosh, you really do have a philanthropic side to you as well, don't you? A willingness to help, to teach, to get cultures to come together and all those sorts of things. But one of the things, just reading through your fascinating biography here, is a story about a plaque on a tree in Rotterdam. And I'm intrigued by this, so you need to explain it to me.
So starting at the beginning of this story, a few years ago I was asked to conduct here at the Artscape the premiere of a new work by the Stellenbosch composer Antonie Schonken, Die Nieuwe Verbond, which was based on a text that Einkie Krog wrote. I ended up making a fantastic recording with Einkie and my choir in Pretoria a few years ago that was released by Vector Productions. And part of this process where we premiered it here in Cape Town, that year in Rotterdam, every year there's a very famous poetry festival, the Poetry International Festival. And Einkie Krog was celebrated for her lifetime achievement that year at the festival. And they asked her what would she propose, something special to be performed there. And she asked me and Antoinette if it would be possible for us to do this production there. So I got a choir together there. Antoinette got instrumentalists together. The three of us went there and we performed it. And this festival has really put its roots down in Rotterdam. And everywhere it's poetry and it's spoken word and it's beatboxing. It's fantastic. It has a long legacy of that. And the one afternoon, there's a specific gracht in, I don't know what that would be in English. Like in Amsterdam, you have the water that runs.
A canal.
A canal, yes. That, in Afrikaans, you say a gracht.
And
in this canal, in the middle, there's a long patch of grass that runs with the only trees that survived after the Second World War. After the war ended, the town of Rotterdam, city of Rotterdam, ended up chopping up all the trees to make fires. And this specific canal celebrates these trees that are still in existence. And I laid down beneath a tree in one of my breaks, and as I looked up, there was a little plaque on this specific tree that said, Graf van die ongenaamde dichter Breiten Breitenbach.
What a coincidence.
And at this specific tree at the end of the 80s, Breitenbach was celebrated for his lifetime achievement by this festival. And he read the poem there, this specific poem, Graf vir die ongenaamde dichter, grave for the unnamed poet. And this little plaque was there. It was a very special moment.
What a thing. It must have meant a lot to you.
Yes,
actually.
Definitely.
Okay, now you know what, Peter. Radio is very cruel sometimes because you run out of time. You run out of time because you've had such a fascinating
life. A deadline for writing something.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes, you will know that. But we're going to end now with a piece of yours called The Blue Lady Sonata. The third movement, molto ritmico, lots of rhythm. Tell me about the Blue Lady Sonata, clarinet.
Yes, so the Blue Lady Sonata, I was awarded the Stefan Grevier Prize in 2017 for the composition. So it's actually based on the life of Monica Paul Susan. She's the famous green lady.
Yes, the Tretchikov.
In the year that I was writing this, I read an article in the Art Times because Monica Paul Susan had just died. And she lived her entire life not knowing how famous she was.
She did not know
that she was this famous Tretchikov painting.
Arguably his most famous.
His most famous, yes.
Yeah.
And she only found it out later in her life. And she had a very sad life, according to this article. So I wrote a three-movement clarinet sonata in honor of her. And I called it the Blue Lady Sonata because it has jazz influences. And it is here performed by Visser Liebenberg on the clarinet and Tarsha Visser Downey on the piano.
And we're going to hear the third movement.
The third movement, the molto ritmico.
Peter Bezzano, it's been great talking to you and to experience your incredible enthusiasm about life and music and cross-cultural events and all the things you do. So thank you, and we will definitely keep in touch, and I hope you settle well in Cape Town.
Thank you, Rodney. It was lovely speaking to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.